I am, but must be looking for a meal today. So try to trick me with your wheel today. I'll get in closer, make you feel in pain, feel in pain.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Steve, you're back in the USA.
And boy, are my arms tired.
What a flight.
What a flight. Now, don't even get me started on what a flight, okay? So, as we all know, travel is just a hellscape of an in and of
itself.
Composed
of layovers and lots of fun.
Just international travel is just brutal. If you didn't know, you didn't hear last week, I was just in Barcelona, Spain for a...
Hola!
Hola!
Goal!
Buddy, I'll tell you what, you know, I literally just got back. I mean, I'm talking like hours ago, folks. And you got to force yourself to get up. So... if you thought I was wacky that last week, Jay, prepare.
I am sitting down. I'm already.
The problem is this, other than to tell you about the show, but right now, if you've ever watched your life from third person, that's where I'm at. So sometimes you just, I'm not even on the devil's lettuce, Jay.
Oof,
and you're just like, but. Got back from Spain there last night, and the travel is just horrendous. I know how, Jay, right before they hit that pneumatic plunger in the frontal cortex of a cow before they become a delicious hamburger.
Well, okay.
That's what you feel
we're
like.
Going there for
right.
a second. Okay.
Well, you're being herded through the slaughterhouse. That's about what travel is like anymore, folks. If you're going on vacation, temper your expectations of what it is like getting through the airport. Nothing worse than that. And then,
you're glad it's over.
And gross and just scummery, you know. Mm. We should all pull our cash together and just never mind. I'm going to say the recent airport change or airline changes have made it even more interesting, but I'll leave that alone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I did. It's all a fever dream right now, but I think I was going to fill guys in. We talked about last week about what I was seeing. So I'll give you the cliff notes, if you will, Jay. Get your notebook out here. So first and foremost, I'll get this out of the way. So it's like a broken record at this point, but it's not lost on the people over there. You go over there and show them what America's made of sometimes, Jay. You have to show them.
Okay.
You show the European peasant American exceptionalism. That's the goal.
In what way, Steve? Please elaborate.
Went over there. Went for the GOAT level three-peat, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Three-peat. I can hang her up. Anytime now. Can't do better than that. Took home the first place for soft lures. And can't say all the big players weren't there because they were.
This is the biggest show in Europe.
Yeah, this is
the sport fishing show.
This is FTEX. This is the one. This is where it gets done. This is your European counterpart to ICAST.
Yeah, that's great.
Put that in your freedom pipe and smoke it. I was hanging with, there's another USA company. There's actually a couple, believe it or not. I'll get into that. But I will leave who it was, but another company there. And he said, next year you should just do the Kenny Powers on stage. Right, I don't know if you've never watched Eastbound and Down, but no, never. You don't do that until you're back. But what it is, and you'll be seeing more about it here shortly, is one more compliment in the entire lineup, the lure project that I've been working on, which is making lures that I want, and hopefully you want to. So. Pull pause baits, jerk baits, all that stuff. There's plenty of that crap in the world. again, fixing what I see to be inadequacies or things that can be done. La, 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 la. And cut to the chase of the bait that won it, took first place there, is called The Brute. And you'll see teasers and trailers of that as we get along here. That's going to be a 2027 release, right? So it's not not going to be there, but we'll slide in some info. So had the prototype there, couple little tweaks, couple little things here and there, but already pretty freaking awesome. And definitely, it's funny. I mean, I just call it like it is. It's been very cool working with Livingston, all this stuff, and kind of changing definitely the perception of that company in the muskie and pike world. And in all honesty, it's funny, Jay, we've been, what is this, 5 years at it in Europe, I think, pretty handedly.
Kind of seems like it might be 5 years already. Is.
And the time flies, but it's kind of interesting to see that change or the shift and the energy shift and, you know, just whatever. I'm not like trying, it's not the, feel good moment, but it's cool. You know, you just keep plugging away because, I mean, last 3 years, it was for hard bait or hybrid bait, excuse me, which is Kraken. You got that. You had the Titan. Last year was Menace. So 2 years. What I'm saying, soft plastics are the game. We know that. That's a big component of musky fishing, your jerk baits. And those Euro guys are loving the Menace. And the Brute's going to kind of round that out, I think.
Very cool.
As far as in the soft plastic, so.
Yeah, I've seen some teasers of it. You sent a few videos after you got back and called me this morning, and looks good.
Yeah, seeing it in the water is the cool thing. So we'll get there. But it's kind of fun. So that's kind of, you know, whatever. There's your three-peat. What do you do, Jay?
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
You try to get over the jet lag and keep on moving.
Try to go for the four-peat. No, I don't know. I'll say this. Interesting show. It's always neat to see the development of things that are happening. And I'm just going to say it. I don't care. The Japanese thing has run its course. Right?
In what way?
Hear me out. So, we have, in my opinion, for what it's worth, jump the shark on a bunch of things in the tackle game. I promise you my take will... how can I promise what my take will be? I feel safe to say that my perception will be the same after I cast here in a few weeks. We will see. I'll report on that. But you being whatever the heck, somebody told me I was neurodivergent over there, which is hilarious. It's probably true. But seeing it for what it is, we went through this phase in tackle, not just muskie, because the influence spilled over into muskie, but predominantly in the bass world, of looking to Japan, looking at their quality, looking at their design, and then nicking that, stealing that, taking that, running with that, right? And I'm not particularly like this bait or that bait, but, you know, there's a tremendous amount of influence that came out of Japan on that front. And what I'm getting at is I've seen it permeate every brand to now it's homogenous.
Okay.
Okay. Does that make sense?
A little bit.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that doesn't have an edge anymore. The edge is gone. Right? When you first heard big, loud rock guitars, Pete Townsend did the windmill, right? The stack, the Marshall stack is cranked to 10. Brantley's bringing, you know, boom. Now everybody does it. And then at a certain point, it's a movement and it's not unique. That's what I'm getting at, right? And there's a difference in creation in the way when things are made of it might be weird now or it might, heck, just me as a person, I've just kind of rolled this way where I don't care. You know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And you see this homogenous take on things where, oh, here's something cool. Now everybody runs with it and it becomes a style and it becomes a trend and it becomes a fad. You don't see too many people wearing wide leg jeans too often anymore, Jay. They put the JNCOs away. All right, you don't see it. Whatever it is. But in the tackle game, I'm seeing that has run its course, and I don't think anybody knows where to go after that.
Because there's been a sense of repetitiveness.
No, it was the trend. No, it was everybody looked at flat out Megabass, right? You have a company called Megabass, and you have Depps, mm-hmm. and you have a few different Japanese companies that did some really cool stuff. And that was, we got to do that. And it became a emulation of that. And now it's become a parody of that. And that's how trends work, and that's how things happen. For what it's worth, this is all just opinion. But that's how things run their course. And it's just like, and there's nothing in particular. There's not like a bait. But when you see it, you go, that was really cool when I saw it 6, 7, 8 years ago. And there it was on its own. Now everyone is doing something in that vein, right? You can't cool. Cool cannot be, everybody can't be cool. Everything can't be cool. Everything can't be unique. So when it's emulated and it's copied, it dilutes its impact.
It dilutes it. Yeah.
Okay. And that's what's happening.
Putting it. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what's happening in tackle, and I'm seeing it.
I got you.
And what's next? Who knows?
Mm.
But it's a dilution of what was once creative and innovative is now everywhere, and everybody's got a little bit of it. Everybody's got, you know, a little that secret sauce has been spread, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Innocent, whatever. That's kind of my take, and then. You've got some other stuff coming down the pike. I mean, stuff that I think will be here today, gone tomorrow, to be honest with you. And I'm kind of like sitting here going, when is someone going to do something inspiring or different? We'll see. I mean, I think whatever the crap I'm churning out, whether you like it or not, I dig it. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm this or I'm that or I do this or I'm that, but I think it's different in some aspects. You know what I'm saying? There's tips of the hat or there's this or there's elements of that, but I don't think it's like earth shattering either, but I'm just going it'll be interesting to see what the next phase is because we're about due, you know? So that's kind of the take on that front.
Yeah. Cause you went to this show and this is just, just Europe. This is kind of like the worldwide aspect.
No,
and you're seeing
Japan,
samples of everything. And yeah. And it's like, okay.
I mean, Ryug's there.
Some cool stuff, but.
Well, and that's the thing. You've got your Japanese distributors, right? So there's shows in Japan, but not every independent bait maker from Japan's going to come. Right. Tens of thousands of dollars for the booth. You know, you get your plane. There's a tremendous. I mean, when you think about this, this is not rolling up to a musky show on the weekend. You know what I'm saying?
You're telling me there's a tremendous cost. Involved
if you're
a manufacturer going to that thing.
Right.
Holy cow.
You're not sitting there with a card table. You know what I'm saying?
And no, you're not.
And I wish you were. It would be cool, but, you know, you're doing your backgrounds, your backdrops. And I will give a shout out. It was funny. An American brand that was there, G-Rap, which we have some of their stuff at the store. We've had in and out of the store at different times. But they were there for their first trade show. We had a really funny moment and a just kind of a humorous thing. I went by their booth and they didn't have a backdrop, Jay.
Okay.
They just had.
And they looked out of place.
Well,
yeah,
they just had the table with their baits on it, and didn't realize like the vibe of the show where everyone has like these pre-manufactured panels. They go into
very
like, these
elaborate setups.
Very elaborate setups.
I saw some video. Right.
Yeah, it was fun, and we had a laugh. He's like, "I had no clue," and he said, "It's like, you know." And they had a really good reception, but yes, I mean, so that level of that show. You've got a lot of names that you know, and then a lot of distributors, which a distributor is they're not the manufacturer. They literally distribute other brands. So you're seeing a smattering of things from Japan. Obviously, your Scandinavian countries. Saw some friends from Finland. And so if you want to know the hot carp baits, Jay, we could go down that rabbit hole. But in predator fishing, which they call muskie and pike, right? And they don't have muskies, but it's called predator fishing, predator baits, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, is what it is. So we'll see what the next phase is. And then, you know, on the other tackle fronts of things, kind of stagnant. Just my 10 cents for what it's worth. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. What an experience. What a week.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of stuff packed into 6 days or however long.
It was Saturday to Saturday, and now I'm jet lagged. Get out. But as close to the Pope as I've ever been, Jay. The Pope.
Oh, yeah.
So the Pope was there. F1 racing was there. Formula One. So they're setting up for Formula One. And the Pope, they apparently have, you want to talk about a cluster of getting around somewhere. So Barcelona is pretty metropolitan city. I mean, it's a big city, but they were I don't know what they called it. They were opening or the Pope is blessing a building they've been working on for 144 years, Jay. That's it. Under construction. Okay. And it's always funny when you look at the Euro brain, you go, well, that's people have started that building are dead and we're calling it finished now. So that was going on.
Well, they take a lot of holidays over in Europe, you know.
That's a whole other animal too. We'll get the
lunch
breaks. Try getting you a croissant before like 10 a.m. there. It's pretty funny. Euro brains wired a little different, boys. They are not, they ain't hustlers, baby. So they might have, the one thing I might say is this, let me open this. They might have a little bit better thumb or finger on the pulse, Jay, of work, like work-life balance, possibly. You know, but when you go and see everybody taking their siesta in the middle of the day and the restaurants don't open till 8. That's tough. It's like you're okay. You get out of the trade show. You want something to eat. Like I was saying last week, living on tapas.
You were talking about that, right?
Yeah. But yeah, pretty much that. And then you're waiting for the restaurants to open. And then of course we're on business schedule and then all the locals leave their house. And I'm not talking about 21-year-olds, Jay. I'm talking like 40 and 50-year-olds go out drinking at 11 at night. That's when they kind of hit the streets, right? But anyway, if you have, whatever. It's not a tourism show, but it was kind of funny. It's always a different vibe. Glad to be back in the land of muskies and plenty. But other than that, jumping gears, shifting hard. Yeah. To what's happened at the Muskie Shop, because it looks like the comings and goings have been going and coming. Couple new things here. B&N Triple Shad spinnerbait. Jay, what do you know about this guy?
Yeah, that thing just came in Friday. And
is it a big
B&N? That's the boys from
frame,
Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not a huge frame. I'd say it's an average large frame, if that makes any sense. It's not bass size, but
I want to ask because you have like the really big spanky whiplash or the
exactly.
It's not that big. Okay, so just
no,
a triple.
It's not that frame size. Okay. It's a casting size. We've got 1.5 ounce
triple,
head. So
more blades, more good from your friends at B&N. They make great crank. Is that their first
kind of seems like it. Yeah, they told we didn't even know about it. We had an order in a while ago, and Bob and his son always come to our bash every year, and they will be again this year. And they make those great handmade crankbaits. And they're from Ohio, so they're in like that small.
We've covered that they're from Ohio.
Yeah,
but if you didn't know, Jay, where are they from? One more time.
Well. Yeah, it's high in the middle and round at both ends.
Oh, Ohio, for sure. Up there in the land of trolling small cranks. No, it's funny. That's the whole other colloquialism of musky fishing that often gets overlooked, Jay. It's neat when you look at brands, you can kind of get a vibe from where they're from and being in. They fall into that Midwest, the trolling, and a lot of those bodies of water where that's so good. But yeah, when you can't go wrong with a spinnerbait, that looks like a good offering from being in. I like
it. Solid spinnerbait, yeah. We got a lot of stuff in from Smelly Dog, too. And that's another great example of just, you know, it's a one-man show. It's Mark Smith.
Uh-huh.
West Virginia, I think, isn't he?
Mountain Mama, take me home. Yes.
That's your neck of the woods over
it
there.
It is.
So.
You've got the Violent Strike Toothy Critter Swim Jig.
It's two more new things from Keith at Violent Strike. Yep.
Another spinnerbait was a DB Mega 910. So it's a not.
That's a big boy. That's a big and grub on the back scale.
The name gave it away. Mega.
Oh, Mega?
Mega.
Well, Mega. Doesn't give it away with Mega Bass because they aren't that big.
But the Japanese people are so small.
Exactly.
Anyway, is that on par with the Spanky Whiplash?
That's a big boy. That's a trolling, or you know, I'm going to flip it out and run that thing extremely slow on deep weed lines. You know
what we need to get for some of these? Because I mention that because when it comes to the different frame sizes on the spinnerbait, what we need to figure out, is it saying the listing, the frame size or anything of that nature?
No one's ever done that.
What we need to do.
To categorize that. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Well, here's the thing. Easily done. You know when you go, and embarrassing, this parlays right back into making baits, Jay. My obsession with Hobby Lobby. Right?
Yeah. Yep. I know that.
Uh-huh. Lots of parts, lots of pieces. Might be in there making myself a sassy little pair of shorts or making a bait. You don't know. You never know. What's that guy buying? Sassy short supplies or parts for a
lure? With the rhinestones?
Anyway.
Oh, sorry. I don't want to ruin it.
The fabric cutting thing, they have those, I'm just, it popped in my head where, like for a fabric cutting, or we need something that has vertical and horizontal measuring on it to lay these on for a picture. I think that'd be valuable. We'll figure that out.
Size 2 frame, stuff like that.
Yeah, or come up with something to homogeneize.
Yeah, there you go.
Jet lagged. Jay, hot town, summer in the city. Is what they say. That's what the kids.
Okay.
That's what the kids are saying. Anyway, what else is going on here? Is that a crane restock I smell?
Yeah, we got more cranes too.
More cranes.
Yes, we did.
Got that going on.
400 or something like that. All 200 series.
We got new dry fits, hat brim clips.
Yeah.
Jody Michael doing the art, getting creative. Maybe the idea came from Hobby Lobby. You never know.
Why? But there are no rhinestones in that little sucker.
That is the Diamond Gem Special Edition that's coming.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
The Rhinestone Edition. Yeah. Muskie Shop merch.
Hey, we got some more of your books in. So okay. I know last week we were out. So those came in too. You've been out a while. I'm trying to fill you in here. Yeah.
We got so
much stuff in the last week. You wouldn't even believe it.
Restock and everything?
Yes. Just crazy.
Bring it on. Well, that's cool. Yeah. Just to keep on it. I can't believe, and it's shocking. I mean, it is freaking June 14th.
I was just thinking about that. You know, you talked about iCast, which is the America version of that big fishing show, and that's coming up right around kind of the same week as our bash.
Oh, that's
July
that's
18th.
That's the
what,
that's,
you got the TV on there. What's
no, that's
going on?
That's the Chuck Wagon Gang that runs through my house.
Oh, okay.
No, it's early here. We had to do the podcast now because at some point I'm going to sundown like your grandpa at Thanksgiving. Right, it's coming. Is he dead or is he sleeping?
Sundown, better beware.
You know, it's coming here soon. But no, that was the Chuck Wagon Gang running through my backyard, barking their brains. Jay played the tiny stagecoach driver in that commercial, believe it or not. That was one of his first acting gigs.
Oh, and I don't even remember. Thanks for bringing that up. Thanks That's a for bad bringing memory, it Steve. Up. Wow.
Well, he started one film that we can't talk about anyway. Mark, when making your own or selecting a spinnerbait, what determines whether you use a single or double blade? How do you decide between Willow and Colorado? When would you use a double blade?
Good question.
Okay, so spinnerbait composition.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the show writes itself, Jay. We get BNNs and he asks, what's going on here? Segway City, other than, do you hear that? No squeak. I came home. Jetty Michael, I have a lovely black leather Lazy Boy office chair right here in the podcast studio.
She oiled that thing for
you? No, got a new chair.
Oh, it's new.
It's new.
Squeak free.
I feel like I'm sitting on a cloud. Anyway, how are we determining what to do with a spinnerbait? First and foremost, blades. Let's cover this. A lot of people haven't heard it before, or maybe they don't think it applies to spinnerbaits. Blades and lift. Shameless book plug. Cover this in the Muskie IQ, where I talk about blade composition and how that affects things. But you're getting it for free right here. Take notes. So, surface area and lift. Right? These are principles that play with a spinnerbait. So, what is going on if you reel a spinnerbait at the same speed and change your blades? Now this is, imagine, controlled experiment, if you will. This is not multiple cast, but I'm saying theoretically in your head, imagine you can reel at the exact speed,
right,
in open water.
I'm with you.
You will see a change in running depth, right? The same applies to your bucktails.
Absolutely, it does.
So a Colorado blade, right? Named after Frank Colorado Blade.
John Denver.
Invented the Colorado blade.
He did.
He said, Rocky High Running Depth Colorado Blade.
How do you know this? I thought I was... Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was there when the old... When the old spells were written. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, nonetheless, John Denver smoked peyote and invented this Colorado blade. So, it's a rounded, obviously, we all know it. We love it. I am basically insane right now with what I would call a plain hangover. I apologize.
And so, you're going to fall asleep in that new Lazy Boy, so I'll try to keep you awake.
I'm fighting her. Anyway, focus. Focus,
yep,
Steve.
Focus. Go, yeah, yes. I'm with you. Hello.
So, Colorado Blade has the largest surface area on a 1-to-1 comparison. So, in your head, you're running this thought experiment of running depth and blade composition. If we have a willow leaf blade that is the same length from the attachment point to the end of the blade is a tremendously smaller blade, and an Indiana blade, right? named after
Give me a minute. Yeah, that was named Rick after Indiana. Oh shoot, I can't remember his name.
Rick. Indiana. But anyway.
I was thinking of the coach, you know, the Hoosiers coach that used to throw the chairs.
Bobby Knight
used to like, he was a fly fisherman. But anyway, yeah.
Anyway, so if we have our typical blades, Colorado, Indiana, Willow, their surface area impacts tremendously running depth.
Yeah.
So what do you pick? What do you choose? That's first and foremost. What is your intended purpose with said spinnerbait? Let's go back. I have the Steve's Meat Grinder with figure eight. It has a giganto willow leaf blade that has, I mean, it pulls, that's a pretty good pull and bait, but it runs deep. The intent is a lot of vibration, and I'm minimizing weed fouling for probative casts in weeds. Now, what are we trying to accomplish is a running depth thing, because people will often say they are on X, Y, and Z blades. They're on double eights. They're on 7-6 staggers. Do I believe that the combination of your blades influences what is going to happen? Are you going to get bit or not? Yes, with a caveat. If you are fishing conditioned fish that have seen it all and have been caught twice before you even launched your boat this year, the composition of your blades is going to matter far more than low pressure or not, you know, heavily pressured waters. With that being said, do I believe that one could catch a fish on a Colorado willow leaf or a Colorado composition spinnerbait? And then, are they going to be that particular about the vibration the blade is throwing off more so than the running depth? No, in general, right? Don't take this to like super pressured metro water, but I am making my selection based on running depth first and foremost, period, right? So that is how we select the blade we're going to use on a spinnerbait. Now, you can go down the rabbit hole even further. You can use a Colorado blade with a heavier head. That's a rough dog, right? Rough dog tackle.
Rad dog.
Rad dog, yep. Excuse me.
Yep.
I'm a little tired. But rough dog, rad dog. What's a rad dog, Jay?
Well.
Is there a rad dog? No, there's a rough dog.
It's not. It's just a rad dog. You know, meaning cool.
Spuds, you know, rad's McKenzie. Cool.
That's what the kids say, you know.
Spuds McKenzie.
Yep, there you go. Okay. He edited it.
You got that. But you can have different weight to compensate for the lift of a spinnerbait is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I understand.
However, let's just keep it a one for one. And they say, and the guy, Mark, asks, when do you use a double blade with one or each or blah, 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 blah. Again, for me, it is going to be a dynamic of what are you going for? And it's about intent. And that's the funny thing. Talk about bait making. Talk about the trade show. Are you trying to make something to make a human being buy this off a rack? Are you making something that is a tool? Two different things. Two incredibly different things. Most of what you will see for sale is trying to get someone to buy it. And some of the best baits that have staying power are tools. That's the difference. So if you just want to make a cool spinnerbait, who knows? You could do this, you could do that. For me, it's not a decision of I'm going to make this because this is what I want to make. I'm going, okay, like with the fig or with the Steve's meat grinder, that's intentional. That is to do the thing in the weeds. I've got oh my goodness, Jay, what is my other spinner bait with figure eight? Good
tailgater.
God. Tailgater, folks. Woo.
Yellow.
Burning a little bit slow tonight. Brain dead. So the tailgater is a Colorado leaf or a Colorado blade, excuse me. But that's more of a rip pull start composition with this small tail blade on it. Really like a jerk bait or contouring, really craggy stuff. You're in tough cover, you're skinny water angler, right? You can just throw it out there and burn it. But the way
burst pause. Mm-hmm. That's a spinnerbait that's kind of out of the norm.
It is, because it's really the rear blade, the second blade on that is not up next to the Colorado. It's actually to counterbalance the Colorado on a helicopter move. Which is helicoptering a spinnerbait is when you stop it and let it fall. But I wanted to give it more visual presence and change the angle of fall. Really, like I said, the tailgater is a jerk bait. I mean, you can throw it and turn the handle. I've had plenty of people on my boat do that and catch fish, But for me, I was like, okay, I'm in shallow water. I need something that I can follow up or do something different with. So I'm just telling you what my intentions were with the spinnerbait. If you're going to make your own, you need to go, what is my intent? Because you can't have, it's like the people at DeWalt just making super mega tool and you go, what does this do? It's an oscillating hammer, right? We've taken a hammer and an oscillating saw and put them together. Okay. What's right. that
and
for?
You go, I'm not sure I need that or can put it to good use.
Right. There you have it. So that is the way I kind of, not kind of, that's the way I perceive baits. You go, I don't need an oscillating hammer. I think there's another name for us. Now I say that out loud a second time. There's another name for an oscillating hammer, JMT. But long story short, don't make the tool and then find the job you needed it for. Right? Identify what you're trying to accomplish and then create the tool for it. Totally different concept. If not, and I'll say this to the same front. If you're new to it, make a bunch, right? And mix it up and just, yeah, that's kind of the joy of making lures or playing with spinner baits or, you know, it's no mystery. Even like with the Steve's Meat Grinder, I was just starting off with their standard bait and just augmenting from there. I've always advocated quick changing on spinner baits. It is the multi-tool, right, of musky fishing. So, get in there and just play around with it. Goodness gracious, Jay. Oh. Can you get brain damage from jet lag? Because I feel like it.
They've done studies, you know, and 60% of the time, uh-huh. it works 100% of the time.
That one movie you're in, you played a doctor. But I don't think it was... I think
several
it was
times.
This guy says he's got his... email as his name, no real name, probably Hunter. We'll see. I'm in the Minocqua area. Could be Jeffrey. I'm in the Minocqua area quite a bit. It could be you now. let's narrow it down. Is he wearing a hat?
Yeah, I wear a hat a lot.
Uh-huh.
Might be me.
Does he have a mustache? We're playing guess who. Anyway. Oh, I'm in the Minocqua area quite a bit and have been seriously chasing muskies for 2 years as a college kid. See, we've narrowed it down even more. He wears hats and he's in college. I've spent a lot of time learning through podcasts and time on the water, but I'd love to hear your process for finding new trophy lakes. If you were a younger angler starting from scratch today, what would be the top three steps you'd take to identify lakes with the best potential for producing big muskies? Secondly, how much do you DNR stocking reports factor into that process? Love the pod. Hope to hear from you soon. Okay. He's a young guy. He wears hats and he's in Minocqua, Jay.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that guy last week somewhere. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I saw
where,
him.
But yeah.
Lurking around the Culver's parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if I had to go back, what am I doing now? Start from scratch today. I feel like Jay, that's the thing though. I feel like I'm starting from scratch every day. Never complacent. Always hungry. Anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean
what am I gonna do?
Go ahead.
Huh? Anyway. So here's the things. I don't have three steps, right? I should probably have a 12-step program, but we can't even get to three.
Right.
To identify lakes with the best potential for producing big muskies. Let's go with things. Let's identify things I'm not going to do. First and foremost, go where everyone else is going. Right? That's number one.
You're talking about in the Lakeland area up here.
No.
Where there's a million options.
No, he's saying he's in Minocqua. Let's stick with his area where he's at. He's looking to identify trophy class water right there. I'm not going to say Bay of Green Bay or anything like that. We're talking that neck of the woods. So things that I'm going to not do.
Lakes around
right.
There. Yeah.
Here's where we're at. If Joey's guide service is down there banging it or your buddies or a lake has a history of production, right, for big fish or things of that nature, I'm going to avoid it. Right? Why? Well, if it's gotten to your ears through everyone, right, I'm going to avoid it. There's a multitude of lakes up there where you hear, oh, this has got this. Now, I should say this. He said trophy potential. I'm not thinking 40s right now. I'm thinking bigger than 40s, and we've done this multitude of times up there where it can be done. So, but let's say we're looking for upper 40s, that elusive Wisco 50, right?
Sure.
They're hard to come by.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to look for is avoiding pressure, right? From people on anything. I'm not great at acreage, but any of these small lakes, you hear whispers and rumors that oh, this, that, and the other produce this or produce that. The reason being is that a lot of those lakes up there have 1 4-footer in it, or it's got the 1 or 2 50s in it, right, Jay? And I'm getting at, every lake has its giants, but if it's been identified by others, it's probably been hit. So why fight the pressure? Okay.
Okay.
What I'm also going to do is I'm going to look at where is everyone at. And this is twofold, right? Right in the dead center of Minocqua is Minocqua, right? What is it? Is it the official Lake Minocqua, Jay? I'm a
Lake Minocqua.
Exactly.
Quagga-saga.
Right.
Tomahawk, it's a chain.
Right. Mm-hmm. Two ways of looking at this. Nobody wants to fish out there during the peak of season because it's so busy, right? However, they all run out and they've got to do the drive. Everybody's got to drive. Everybody's got to trailer the boat, and they've got to go to X, Y, and Z lake, or they got to feel like they did something. This is the same thought process I use while guiding. Everybody's got to drive the boat.
Yeah.
And you and I, and you know, when I'm thinking of this, you know the fish I'm thinking about, which is big girl in the net, not real far. The trophy potential of things that are really close to everybody is often overlooked because of the assumption that they're beat up, right? If it's right next to the boat launch, nobody fishes it. They might fish it on their way in at night and they're all beat and they don't care. But I'm going to look from two polar opposite perspectives of finding water. He asked for how I'm going to find water I want to fish. Water that is way too metro, not metro, but way too in the thick of things, right? Oh, it's horrible. There's nothing but jet skiers and this, that, and the other out there. Cool. Good for me. And water that is too far away. Okay?
Too long of a drive.
Too long of a drive. Things that I've heard numerous times. Nah, I don't want to drive that far. Right? People get trapped in their own world and their own bubble. And this is a whole other animal. You know it. I know it. When I say this, you'll think about it for a moment and it'll hit you. In your daily routine and in your life, you have kind of your zone. You go to this end. That's as far as you go, to the west, the east, the north, to get goods and services and things that you like to do. Right? That's kind of the zone that you run. Once you get past that, you notice. But if you're inside that zone, that's your operational zone of what turf that you cover in your day-to-day life. Right? People do the same thing. They stay in that, I guess let's call it the comfort zone, or kind of the zone you're running in. That's what they do. If you look at, say, an area that has a population density, with him being in Minocqua, let's look at Eagle River, let's look at Minocqua, let's look at Conover, let's look where there's places where people live in. If you go, okay, if it's 30 minutes outside of that, nobody's hitting it. Nobody's hitting it. They don't, there's too much good water between here and there. Look for
too many options. Mm-hmm. Yeah, too many options within 20 minutes.
Right. So look at the zone, go, well, most people are lazy, they won't do this. So break out of that. And the way I've found some really cool water is say, let's look at two cities. I'll probably burn something here, but a perfect example. You have Minocqua and then you have Hayward, right? What's the road in between the two, Jay? 70, right?
Highway 70, right?
If you get on Highway 70 to Hayward, it is what, 2 hours? Two?
Yeah, hour and a half.
Hour and a half?
Yeah.
Nobody's doing that. And in between it, dead in between it, there's some pretty cool stuff, and there's actually some big fish water there.
And well, that's kind of the running joke we always have at the Muskie Shop. It's like how many people are driving from way south, you know, southern Wisconsin, Illinois, whatever. They're making the big, you know, weekend fishing trip, and they come up and they, you know, they stop at the Muskie Shop and they keep on going because they know they got to get into Vilas County. Well, you just drove by Oneida County.
Yeah. There's that. So we have that element. And I'm just telling you, what I'm telling you right now is not musky things. These are human nature things. So that's first and foremost. Because with these bodies of water not being massive, it not being a Canadian Shield, like, you don't want to be falling up against 100 boats if you really want to shot at really consistent trophy quest stuff, right? So consider the human nature things of what people are willing to do. The other thing is small bodies of water with notoriously horrible boat ramps.
Always
a plus. If you hear somebody, Jay, you know exactly what lake I'm thinking of right now, where it's okay. I hear I've got my rig on there, and we've got one shot to get it on there without just tearing something up, or it's like going to rip the trolling motor. So many times where I've done this, and Jay and I have gone out, and it's like, okay, bad boat ramp, middle of nowhere, nobody else out here, 500 acres. If it's got the depth and it's got the forage, and it's a Joe Bucher has said this, I'm stealing it from him, every lake up there has their big fish, right?
Yeah, he's always said that.
And I've seen
it. For sure true.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it. The worst, I can't burn it because it's not my lake to burn. But we went with Josh Krieger, who didn't do his, if Jay, I owe you money. He was supposed to do his report. Jay and Jim actually did the Muskie Report, guys, this week while I was in Spain, which I got so busy I didn't put up. We're going to have that weekly, so we'll have that report coming from the shop. Jay, I apologize for that not going up. That's my bad. So starting with a fresh week this next coming week, we'll have the Muskie Report for those guys, for everybody that's traveling up there that wants to know what the scoop is. But that small lake we went out on, Jay, has produced a 4-footer, and I don't think that's 100 acres. I don't know if it's 50 acres.
Yeah, right.
So
a little lake, yeah.
What I'm saying is don't follow trends and go where other people are unwilling to go. Now, what does that mean for you? You are going to have to figure it out. What do most people not want to do? They don't want to figure it out. They want to go, oh, there's Lenny's weed bed. There's Terry's reef, right? I mean, the amount of times I have had people in the last few years, they fish St. Germain, Big Saint, right? Uh-huh. And I mean, go the weed bar on the end, the island, and the little rock out from it. Yeah, that's where we fish. So a dude from Tennessee who goes out there with his buddy Jay a few times, and everybody else knows it. Bucher took me out there eons ago. He's been hitting it. How many guide clients did he take out there back in the day? Or how many episodes did he film there? And then how many guides know that? And you said Lee, you know, big fish in every lake. You told me a story about Lee lost a big one out there. Everybody knows the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, okay, there you have it. That's a fact of, and if I, you know, you kind of go, how many people know that? So if there is a big one there, are you going to be the lucky? Are you winning the Powerball? Right? Are you gambling, or are you fishing with a purpose and a strategy? So knock out the thought process things. Then you're going to have to find a body of water that checks your boxes. I can't even talk. You're going to have to find a body of water that checks the boxes we're talking about, and then you're going to have to figure it out. Now, to wrap it, because I'm just prattling on. As always, how much do DNR stocking reports factor into the process of what I'm looking for? Not much. Because everyone's looked at those. Everybody kind of gauges off of that stuff. You know, it's one of those deals where, you know, you feel like you're looking at something that no one else knows, and no one's going to go through. Everybody I know has gone through those. Right. So there's no mystery there. And it's like, you know, how accurate are they? I'm sure they're somewhat accurate, or what the population is. And like the DNR in Wisconsin will grade the lakes. You know, you've got, this is trophy, this is non-trophy, this is that. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, as long as it's not a body of water that's just notorious for turning out, you know, hammer handles and snaky fish, I think it's there. I mean, the same thing you talk about, we've mentioned it, we've recommended it, you know, Action Lake, like a wildcat, still the Smitty's pulled a 4-footer out of it. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
So
there's big fish in these lakes.
Big fish. Yeah. It's just how you approach it, how you fish it, and what you're doing. And so from my perspective, those are kind of the thought process things that I'm looking at. And notoriously, another 50-incher we pulled, Jay, the trolling one that's on video that we've showed, yeah. You know, everybody's seen that one. A gentleman that previously worked at the shop before he retired lived on that lake and would say there's no muskies in this.
Didn't fish it.
Flat out, is that, am I, if I'm lying, I'm dying, Jay.
No, it's a true story.
There's no muskies in that lake. Not worth fishing.
Fishing. In his mind, yeah. It wasn't worth launching the boat on that lake, right. And attaching it to his dock when he was done and all that extra effort involved or whatever. He'd rather go somewhere else.
And it's the same, and I'm not knocking him, love him, but it's the same guy that was going to Mille Lacs wanting to catch a 50-incher. And here's untapped right behind where you lived. And it's about, a lot of that, I'll tell you, is history-based. Others' experiences dictating what you perceive something is. Right? Okay. Why? You know what I'm saying? How does that? Okay. Well, I mean, it's a missed opportunity. I pick on, you know, we're talking about Johnny, great guy. But it's one of those things of, why did that get in his head? Well, probably because that's what he was been told by everybody in a couple bad days out there. But that's what you got to do. You got to look past everybody's noise and figure the places out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what happened. I mean, I talked, mm-hmm. Well, why? Well, I mean, when we told him about it, we were gracious about it. He's like, oh, my goodness. You know, it wasn't like we're sitting there, you know, rubbing it in. But it's what happens. If you listen, it's just, my goodness. It's not even it's a people thing. That's why I call it doc talk. Old freaking dude that totally, you know, you're taking advice from a dude that probably doesn't figure eight half the time. You don't
have to know how to filter the noise.
Filter the noise, which is true, and you just got to figure it out on your own. Eli, aside from the two books you've written, can you give some recommendations on good nerdy books to read about structure fishing and patterning fish? Doesn't have to be musky related. Can just be about patterning fish in general. Thank you. To be honest with you, on the musky front, not really. Of anything that really is just like about patterning, that really is. I mean, the Dick Pearson book is not bad. It's got some good stuff there. The rest, you have a lot. That's the thing in musky books. You have a tremendous amount of like, you got the Musky Compendium, which is just a collection of stories. And things of that nature. So from a patterning standpoint, not really. If we're looking for real structurally based things, the only thing, and I don't know if we have them, Jay, hard to get, and it's a dense read. And it, when I say a dense read, I mean it is not the most enjoyable. It's a study more so than a read, is the Buck Perry stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one needs to look through that with a different lens. If you go down this rabbit hole, prepare. Buck Perry did not have the luxury of a down scan when he wrote this stuff, right? So he, you want to talk conceptualization. This is conceptual as you get, but a lot of the foundational stuff is there. When it comes to that, I mean, I had a conversation with Jay the other day. I won't go down the rabbit hole of the reason this stuff is lacking in the sport is because it's lacking on a professional level. Does that make sense, Jay? Of the people will say things. I'm not saying it's good or bad. You'll hear another angler. You'll be like, there's a pattern. They're doing this. Might be bass. Might be this fish. Might be that fish. And it's not necessarily a pattern. It's a bite that they were on. And then when that dissipates, it's as if the fish vanished. And the way I kind of gauge, if I'm with another pro angler, or I'm with another angler, and it's not every day. Not everybody is drilling them every day. But what do you do when the results you need or want to happen are not happening? What pivots do you make? And that's kind of the lackluster thing that I see with a lot of people. And so you'll hear a lot, far more talk than you will hear theory and or direction or conceptualization of how to do these things actually put on paper. You're not going to get a lot. And so that's kind of the thing of going down that rabbit hole, is the further you can go down the rabbit hole, there's the less there is. Biology books. There's a book on muskie management, an old book. Look up fisheries management books. And that's kind of the stuff I'll look at now, because again, you'll hear me say there's no empirical data in muskie fishing. What is empirical data? Empirical data, my friends, is fact-based. It is not feelings. It is the real deal. Those are hard to get your hands on. So this guy, Jay, he's taking the journey that I took. He wants to dig deeper, but there's not much. When you pull the curtain back, right, the emperor wears no clothes at times. It's unfortunate. Alex K. Stephen J., hope you're doing well. From listening to Muskie 360, I've learned the value and versatility of spin. Apparently, it's a spinnerbait show, everybody. Thanks. He's learned the versatility of spinnerbaits for muskie. They're like all terrain vehicle of blades. I like that. I will steal that. That said, throwing this out there, is there a time and a place in which a bucktail is more effective than spinnerbaits? It seems like the average angler with a variety of spinnerbaits may not need to bring bucktails along. What's your thought? When is the old traditional bucktail absolutely necessary? Ooh, feisty. I like it. Trying to go for when I would, and again, shallow applications.
Of course.
I had
it's gotta be shallow.
For me, I mean, you try throwing, those, and again, I'm not knocking them. I actually troll with them. Try throwing the big stuff. Put tens on like that Spanky Whiplash versus a set of just Mayhem double tens. That's a different experience. So big blade applications, an inline bucktail pulls easier, right? If I want high in the water column, far easier with an inline bucktail, right? Because the weight's not pulling it down. For superb slow rolling applications, a bucktail. That is when I'm not saying one will work or one won't. He's asking when is a bucktail the absolute better choice, right? Because if we go a one-for-one comparison, you take, say, a Booker tensil bucktail, or you take there's plenty of bucktail manufacturers that use Flashaboo now, so you cannot argue presence in the water, the visual aspect, right? When is the inline more important? Okay. Shallow application. That's the first thing. Jay, can you think of anything else where you're like, okay, it has to be a inline opposed to a spinnerbait?
Speed.
Well,
yeah, most spinnerbaits aren't designed to run at that kind of high speed kind of thing. It's not like a need to, you know, in Wisconsin to, you know, generate a really, really fast retrieve with an inline bucktail. But
to your point, I was going to say that almost the keel nature of it, right? Like, and I mean, not keel, not like that guy on the, remember that show, Forged in Fire? He said, it will keel. Okay. You need to, Doug Morkaita was his name.
Okay.
And he'd say, not K-I-L-L, I'm saying keel like a boat's keel, right? Is to your point on the speed, is you will see if you retrieve a spinnerbait really, really fast, it will kick over. So that's when an inline, you know, your whole signal chain, your whole path is flowing straight. Those are the only times.
Yeah, and there's inline bucktails that can, you know, be run and generate outstanding action at really slow speeds. You know?
Right, but
you know,
but
the if glorious, you're going for what, you know, what has single to be bladed, the, you know, right. Maps, you know, marabou, you know, or something like
speaking
that.
Speaking of, you know, Jay. Well, that's
the, I mean, for slow rolling.
Yeah. Speaking of, got to hang with the MEPS France people. That was cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We were talking it up there. I asked them what they were doing at the show. I said, they were just poking around. I was talking to them at the show and they were just peeking around. I said, you're not here to get business. And I jokingly said to him, I said, MEPS doesn't come to customers. People come to MEPS. He said, exactly. Exactly. No, they're French dude. They know they own it. You know what I'm saying? We're laughing. That's, you got funny. Barry, who's a cool dude that helps Muskie Shop out quite a bit and works with Muskie Shop. But no, the people from MEPS.
Barry was there?
No, I'm talking. Of course they know Barry, but I was saying they're great people, but the French are funny. And MEPS, talk about being around forever. I don't know how long that they've been around, but that's
decades.
You said blades. But I mean, just to the thing on the bucktail versus spinnerbait, it's, you know, pure applicational standpoint. You can do more with a spinnerbait, period. Spinnerbait should be the most popular blade based offering for muskies, period. It's just not.
Yeah.
It starts easy. Check.
Yeah.
Starts easy. You don't hear the, well, I have to kickstart. You don't have to kickstart a spinnerbait, right? And flat out.
Yeah, you can pause it. You can pause it.
You don't have to keep it retrieved or have action. What puts the reason it's not, the reason people are like, I'm not throwing in lines, they don't catch muskies the way they treat spinnerbaits, is the lack of a treble hook. That's why. More hooks, more good. That's why. Mm. I don't miss them on singles. I drill them, right? You have to fish spinnerbaits effectively. They either have to suicide themselves on them or you have to have a good hook set. That's the real difference. Now, I'm sure we're missing some application, but like you said, Jay, I mean, okay, I can stop it and it still has a triggering action, right? It always starts and it copes with cover. I mean, rarely do you bring a spinnerbait through one little weed on the water and it completely stops. The amount of times I've had a follow and I've got double blades and I hit like a 3-inch chunk of weeds and I'm just screwed, right? That's the thing. I'm not, yeah, but whatever. Isaac, hey guys, I fish a lake that has plenty of depth and water. It's an 800-acre lake. That said, a seemingly odd pattern has been observed for several years. I've been fishing sub 4 feet of water despite massive algae blooms in 80-degree water. I just don't understand why this seems to be a dominant pattern. He said, obviously, it's not guaranteed, but when the crappies are in 8 to 10 feet, I'm just checking in and seeing if I'm outside my socks to believe that there has to be fish in that 8 to 10 with crappies, right? Any tips are appreciated. Dirty algae, hot water muskies. That is actually the name of the film Jay starred in. That's crazy. Yeah,
that's a classic one.
Extra dirty hot water muskies was this follow-up. Dr. J still. Anyway, moving on. So, How do we know that they're not targeting something else? There's crappies in 8 to 10. Is there another pattern to understand? He said, to understand what seems to be dominant, right? When there's crappies in the 8 to 10. Is there something far more exploitable there? Also, two, algae blooms minimize light. So in 4 feet of water, whatever they're after can't get away from them as easy as it could in 8 to 10. So we have minimized light penetration due to the algae bloom, and we have truncated space. All right? So prey, theoretically, can the more space there is, the more apt things are to get away. Muskies use structure and depth to truncate the feeding process. So why are they up there? There's a reason. And again, the advantage that's given to them in an algae bloom and 4 feet of water is they have actually minimized the thing, whatever they're preying on, getting away from them, right? And there's minimized light penetration in that. It's not that muskies won't use 80 degree water. It's just when you put a hook in their face, drag them around, put them in a net, hold them up for a picture is when we run into problems, by the way. Right. So what is going on there? That's the question. Now, he says, are there some in that 8 to 10 feet zone? Yes. They're doing something different. Not every fish, and that's the thing with a pattern, not every muskie's doing the same thing. There's always muskies that are on a different pattern. There's multiple patterns taking place at any given time. As people, we like to put everything in a very clear, put it into the box, right? This is what is happening. You got to realize that is happening, something else is happening, and something else is happening. I don't know how many patterns there are at any given time, but there's not just one, right? And you got to look at it from that standpoint. Now, when something like this, it's a known pattern, right? It's been observed for several years. There's possibly the majority are doing that, right? When it's quote unquote a hot pattern or it's really working for a lot of people, okay, a large population of fish are doing this.
That makes sense, right?
And that's the difference of, you know, his ask was, are they out there? Are they out with the crappies? Yeah. Now, tips, what are we doing? You know, he didn't say this. He might be concerned about the water because it's too shallow there or something of that nature. So he's saying, any tips on that 8 to 10 foot crappie bite? I would short line troll it. If you have less fish in an area trolling, because you're covering water, let's say there's a bunch of crappies using that break and you have less muskies there, but more forage, I'm going to troll it, right? You know, I'm not going to advocate sit here and target them in 80 degree water by any means, but you know, if it's kind of like you go, if the majority of the fish are in that area and you want to get on that deeper bite, troll it. Often at times you'll see a pattern where there's stupid forage available, but they're on something else for some reason because it's even easier or readily available. So that's something to consider there.
If there's a big algae bloom, I mean, you went from a moderately clear lake, I'm assuming, to pretty dark, darkness at 12 feet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The muskies get a little higher. Maybe quite a few of them get a little bit higher in that condition. You know, mm-hmm. It's because they know it's temporary. Somehow they know.
Yeah. And that, well, that's,
you know, a lot of lakes around here, you know, we experience, you know, algae blooms too. Some don't, but you know, quite a few of them do.
I'll tell you the thing that people miss in an algae bloom, Jay. And this is this, again, I was alluding to it, of the minimized light penetration. If I'm in algae stained water, I don't care where I'm at, go black on black. Black, 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 black. Right? If you can see it, you're seeing the algae bloom, it is a dominant algae bloom. You need to go something that's just going to stand out. You can have high, bright sun, dead flat, calm day, and there's an algae bloom. I'm still going to just throw all black, double black. If it's a bucktail bite, black blades, black skirt, same thing with spinnerbait, same thing with everything. I'm going with black. It works in algae stained water.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
And that's one of those things of you will, at times in an algae bloom, be shocked of how high those fish are. Again, he's seeing this shallow pattern. And another thing, and I don't know, I'm not on the water with the dude at this time. It could literally be just a light penetration thing. And there's fish. They're not just in that 4 feet of water on the shoreline. They're in that 4 feet of water suspended. That's just where they're at because of predatory efficiency. That's the edge of light penetration where, oh, and they're in 4 to 5, 6 feet of water because that's where they can best predate. So that can be said as well. So something to consider there. Anyway, Jay.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to die. I don't know what. Take a little nappy poo.
It's getting too late in the day to take a nap, though.
I know.
But that sounds like a pretty comfortable lazy boy.
It's going to hurt. Anyway, Jaybird, say good afternoon.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Yep.